Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
I'm a hamster.
No, I'm a hamster.
Well, this is ethnically ambiguous.
Episode 71.
Oh my god, I'm Anna.
I feel like I'm the character from Big Mouth. You haven't seen Big Mouth. You have to see Big Mouth.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm Shireen.
Okay. This episode, we're going to talk about hamsters.
Hamsters. And I'm going to talk about some ancient Syrian history that had Syrians leading the Roman Empire for a little blip of time.
And were those Syrians hamsters?
Well, stay tuned.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Episode 71. So much fun with y'all. We're gonna have a ball today.
I have neck pain.
So have you guys enjoyed my song? The minute I walked in, Anna said she threw her neck out because she was folding laundry.
Mm-hmm.
Also, just there's a laundry machine, washer, and dryer in the office, FYI. Mm-hmm. So we're very blessed.
And my neck was thrown out. I don't know what happened. I just started a pain.
I was afraid she was having like a heart attack, but I think that's not
when I laid down. It felt like I was having a heart attack because my neck hurt so much for the angle.
Right, because you said it was your left side, and anything on the left side, I'm like, heart attack or stroke.
Maybe I am having a heart attack.
No, you're not. You're fine.
What if I have a heart attack in the middle of the show? How wild would that be? We'd have to release it.
We'd get a lot of good ratings.
We would have to release it.
Imagine all the downloads.
Could you imagine?
We are Anna's heart attack.
We are having a heart attack.
Yeah. Anna is in the hospital.
Yeah. Oh, could you imagine?
Yeah, that's crazy. Do for the ratings. Like, do
yeah,
for the pod.
I should. No, you're right. I should have a heart attack. It's really rude of me not to.
Do for the pod.
I'm like at the hospital. They're like, what are you? I was just like, no, it's fine. I was doing a podcast.
Yeah, the fun. Mics are there. Like, we follow you with the
yeah. The doctor's like, we just transferred to a Zoom.
Yeah.
Oh, you're like in the ambulance with the photo. What in the world?
The photo for the episode is you in the bed and me like with the thumbs up.
In the ambulance, like me passed out. Literally, EMT's going to like shock my system back, and you're just like. You can't see, but it's me.
A double thumbs up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that what Nixon would do? Double thumbs up?
Probably. That sounds about right.
Oh, Clinton would do double thumbs up. And Nixon would do peace sign. Yeah, never mind.
Which is so funny, because there's nothing peaceful about Nixon's demeanor.
He was trying to balance that. He was desperately trying to be like, I'm nice! Peace! Anyway, we're recording this the week after Thanksgiving. How was your tea-giving?
My tea-giving was, you know, relaxed. You know, it was very chill. I ate a lot of... I cheated from my keto diet. Ketosis diet. I ate so much food. I had a ton of turkey. I had with cranberry and I had stuffing and I had green bean casserole. I mean, I ate everything, but the two killer options when it comes to like white people food of Thanksgiving is green bean casserole and stuffing. I don't know why, but they're both delicious. Oh, and I love eating turkey with cranberry.
I never got into that.
Dryness with the sweetness.
I had definitely not. We had Arabic food. We had hummus. We did not have any stuffing. We did not have any casseroles. We did have cranberry sauce because apparently my little cousin that was there likes cranberry sauce. But I never got into that, even when I did eat turkey. No, he put it on the turkey. Oh. But but also my mom stopped making turkey, like a whole turkey a while ago. She just makes some legs now, like turkey legs, because everyone just likes those better. And it was really good. And my mom made a special lentil dish for me. It's this thing called harab isbal, which means like he burned his finger, literally. But it's basically this lentil dish with like, she made it with potatoes, but usually it has like some type of pasta. And they're like stewed together. And it's so good. There's like dried pita bread, like toasted pita bread on top. And there's pomegranate and cilantro, not cilantro, parsley. And it was really good. She made it just for me, and it was so nice.
Yum, yum.
Yeah. And I also had corn. I love corn.
Yeah.
Some sweet potatoes, some mashed potatoes. Corny! Yeah, I'm corny.
I think I said that joke last week.
It's okay. But yeah, no stuffing, no casseroles.
Gravy?
So you had a... There was gravy. Yeah. I mean, I don't eat meat, so yeah. I forget that part.
I loved gravy.
Yeah.
I had a little bit of mashed potatoes, not a lot.
I had a sweet potato instead. A little baked one. But then I brought a vegan pumpkin pie with me, and I ate it all during the span of the 3 days I was home. It was gross.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I had a lemon meringue pie slice, and then I brought home two pieces of pumpkin pie, and I ate them both. One was supposed to be for my boyfriend, but I ate his because I am psycho!
that
is just too real.
Yeah, the episode's ending now. It cut off at that. We're like, what happened? Where are they?
Anna had a heart attack.
But yeah, it was fun. It's like it was a mix of like Arabic food and English or American food, which is fun for me. But the downside of that is that we don't think of having stuffing. So I miss I've heard stuffing is good, but
I've only really discovered it in the last few years because I don't think my parents ever really made it.
Yeah.
The whites make it, and they make it good.
My mom made it 1 year, and she didn't like it, so I think she just stopped making it. We, like, tried it out.
I love it so much.
My mom is so confused. We were watching some type of show, and they were talking about putting the stuffing in the turkey, and she was like, that's disgusting.
Isn't that, like, the original thing they used to do? But now, because we love stuffing so much, we just are like, put a plate of stuffing.
Exactly. There's nothing in the turkey anymore, right?
Would it be crazy if I just went, you know what? No, Anna, you're on keto. What are you doing? I'm just going to go make stuffing.
Maybe it can be keto stuffing. There has to be some type of recipe out there. Oh, no. She's
just salve it. You just look at me. I'm just drooling nonstop.
But yeah, and then the day after Thanksgiving, my mom and I went on a hike.
I have to leave and go make keto stuffing. Oh. Just joking. You guys went on a hike.
We went on a hike. Where? It was really nice. There's a place right next to my parents' house that we go hiking at. It's like a little lake that we walk around, and like during the holidays, I feel like my mom and I go on so many hikes. It's like a SoCal thing. You only can do that in SoCal.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Yeah. Sorry, I did my casual burping.
So you had a very white Thanksgiving.
I had a white Thanksgiving.
What is casserole?
Green bean casserole. It's like,
why do white people love casseroles?
I don't know.
They make casserole out of everything.
I just like the taste of green bean casserole.
So it's just green beans and what? Like bread? Breading? Soup?
Apparently it's black... Wait.
It's like cream of mushroom?
Soup, milk, yeah. Soy sauce, black pepper, beans, onions,
I just feel like every movie I've ever watched, like, a white person has a dish of casserole to bring to a house.
Yeah, casseroles are huge. I don't know why. I think they're just easy because you just mush a bunch of shit together and you're like, here. You
bake it, yeah.
Here, this should fill your arm.
This casserole should fill up your ass roll.
That's genius. Put that on a t-shirt.
Oh, speaking of t-shirts.
Oh, yeah.
We should bring it up at the end of the episode, too. But since you guys are here in the beginning, also, we have a 30% off?
Is that what it is? 25.
25, sorry, my bad. 25% off TeePublic's discount code. And you guessed it, after last week, the code word is hungry.
Yeah.
The promo code is hungry.
Because we all made you hungry.
We got so many tweets of you guys being like, we're hungry now.
Dude, so many people. I mentioned Fesenjoon on Daily Zeitgeist as well as like an underrated type of Persian food. And so many people tweeted at me that they like went either made it themselves or found it. And then Nick, super producer Nick from Daily Zeitgeist, who's, you know, one of our engineers here, he made it too with his wife.
What?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Out here. Y'all out here at the Fesenjoon. And did
you're
I
starting
not
a
tell
fucking
you,
revolution.
Did I not tell you that shit was lit?
Yeah. And so I like the name also, Fesenjoon.
It's just mind-blowing flavors mixed together.
Because it's pomegranate. It's walnuts.
And like molasses.
That's great.
And a lot of spice. It's just tasty pasty.
We love our spice.
Tasty pasty in the feisty.
That's gross.
I'm lonely.
All right. What are we talking about today? Should we get into it or should we fuck around for a little bit more?
I don't know. What time is it? I don't know why I'm talking like this.
I can start, I guess.
All right.
So, okay. I was
You're
at home.
Ready, Betty.
I went to San Diego where my parents live. Maybe I shouldn't say that. Well, I guess I feel like I've already said it before. Yeah. Regardless.
It's not like you were like, 1123, fake street.
That's my address. No, so I went to...
Your mom's like, all these people are here.
My parents' house for the tea-giving weekend. And it was really great. I love my mom. We played a lot of like ping. My dad too. I love both my parents. But the story I'm about to tell is from my mom because we all played like it was fun. It was me, my little sister, my mom, and my dad. We played like horse at one point because we have a basketball hoop, and it was really fun.
That's
we played
the randomest
ping pong
thing.
And foosball, and then we played a lot of cards. Arabs love cards. Yeah. We love a good card game. But anyways, my mom uses WhatsApp a lot to talk to her like for friends and stuff because it's like a free and also like international messaging service on your phone, WhatsApp.
Yeah, that actually reminded me. My cousin just messaged me on Instagram asking me if I have WhatsApp.
Yeah, everyone has it. As far as like all my relatives, everyone that's like Middle Eastern.
Don't you feel like everyone else has Telegram?
I feel like more people I know have WhatsApp though, but I don't know. Maybe it depends on the country. I don't know. But anyway, her friends send her like essentially it's like the same thing as like sending Instagram memes, but they send each other messages all the time. And there's the story that her friend sent her that was about this ancient history of Syria that she didn't know before. Because the history we learn is controlled by our government and the powers that be that want to control this narrative that we absorb, especially as kids. Mm-hmm. And, like, for example, you don't hear the history of Columbus from, like, the Native American point of view. You know, you hear the history from the people that win, quote-unquote, and they write the history books, and they often skew history to their liking. And a lot of countries are like this, like, presenting themselves in the most ideal, not bad way to like impressionable youth, and Syria is no exception. The government controls everything in Syria, and it has for a long time. In particular, under the Assad regime, they control the education, the job availability, the food, utilities. And my mom said that they didn't learn any Syrian history growing up that wasn't pertinent to the Ba'ath Party, which is the Assad regime's political party, which is a very modern party. So they really didn't learn any notable history about Syria, which is really sad, especially for my mom, having this history not accessible. She is someone that loves history. She loves to read. She loves poetry and ancient stories and mythology. And as she grew up, she realized how messed up this lack of education is, just in general. And she had to seek it out if it was there at all. So a while ago, I mentioned that my mom and I did 23andMe, and it turned out I was like My results was one of the results was 3.9% European, with nearly half of that being Italian, 1.8%. And my mom's results also showed Italian roots too. And I thought it was just like an interesting part of like the mix of things I am. But this past weekend, my mom told me the story about this history between Rome and the Roman Empire and Syria from centuries ago. And I thought I would talk about it because it really is pretty interesting. So let's start with a city called Homs in Syria, in present-day Syria. There's a city called Homs. In English, it's spelled H-O-M-S. And in this city, it's pretty close to where my mom grew up. My mom grew up in Hama, and like an hour or so away, there's a city called Homs. And there's a restaurant that my mom always knew about and would see when she would pass Homs called Julia Domna. But she never knew what this person was, like, who is Julia Domna, and why this restaurant is named after her. Until the story. Okay, so let's go back in time all the way to 145 CE or 145 AD, like a long, long ass time ago. This year, a man named Septimius Severus was born, and he came from a wealthy and distinguished family of equestrian rank. He had Italian-Roman ancestry on his mother's side, and on his father's side, he descended from the Punic culture, which is an ancient North African culture, and Libyan. So he was half Italian-Roman ancestry and half this ancient Punic culture and Libyan.
He sounds like a Harry Potter character.
His name is Severus! Mm-hmm. I'm just going to call him Severus from now on, because the rest of his name is very long. His full name is like 4 words long. So his name is Severus, as far as we know, and he was born in present-day Libya. It used to be called Leptis Magna, which is now present-day Libya, and he was the Roman emperor from 193 to 211. He founded a personal dynasty and converted the government into a military monarchy, which is very, very important because it became military monarchy after that. And before he was a Roman emperor, he was a commander of the army and was victorious in many conquests. His first wife died of natural causes around 186 before he was emperor, and they had no surviving children. In 187, the Roman government sent the commander to Homs to quell the chaos and eliminate any corruption in it, because it was, because back then every city was designated to a pagan god. And Homs was the center of the sun god. And so he went there to quell the corruption, and he succeeded in doing so. Homs was known as the head of this god called El-Gabal, the god of the sun. And there was a huge temple there, and it was the site of the great Nuri Mosque. There was a big, well, it's called a mosque, but it wasn't anything about Islam or anything. But there was a big conical black stone that people prayed to in honor of this sun god. And so at this point, he's in his 40s, he's in Homs, and he's childless, and he wants to remarry. And so he became inquiring into the horoscopes of prospective brides. And apparently he heard the story of a woman in Syria who had been foretold that she would marry a king. And so he sought her out as his wife. And this woman was a Syrian woman. Back then, Homs was called Emesian. And so her name was Julia Domna. Her father, Julius Bassinius, was a descendant from the royal house, a royal house, and he served as the high priest of this local sun god cult, essentially. Well, not cult, you know, it's like a religious sect, a pagan sect. And so her ancestors were priest kings of the famous temple of El-Gabal, and the family had enormous wealth and was promoted to Roman senatorial aristocracy. So they had a lot of pull. Apparently, she was very beautiful and intelligent and very talented. Severus was impressed by her, and they ended up marrying at this like legendary wedding that was talked about. So she was born in Homs around 160 AD in Syria, of Arab descent, obviously. She was Syrian, and her name, Domna, is archaic Arabic, and it means black. It means black, Domna. So she was the youngest daughter of this high priest, and she had two sisters and she also had two nieces because of these sisters, and her sisters would end up being the respective mothers of other Roman emperors, which is significant because it's basically implying that the Syrian hold in Italy lasted generations. So
Wait, I'm sorry, the Syrian hold?
Like the Syrian presence, I guess. Not hold. Sorry, Syrian presence. My bad. There was a significant time in the Roman Empire where the leaders were of Syrian descent. Weird. I know. It's wild. I was so surprised when my mom was telling me this. And my mom was just so frustrated because she had no idea growing up. Like this is amazing Syrian history. And they don't teach kids that back there. It's just like all propaganda and all they like...
They don't want you to know about like weird like European...
No, they just want you to know about how great the Assad family is and like how they've helped like the whole country and like they're so great and whatever. It's very fucked.
And everyone is from Assad.
Mm-hmm.
He had birthed all the Syrians.
Yes, exactly. He is the father of all Syrians. That's disgusting. So they married in early 187, and the marriage proved to be very happy, and Severus cherished his wife and her political opinions because she was very well-read and she was a student of philosophy. They had two sons, Lucius Septimius Bassianus, later nicknamed Caracalla, which is easier to say.
Not a nickname.
And this other son they had, born a year after him, called I'm just going to say, his name is Geta. The last part is G-E-T-A, Geta. Caracalla and Geta. Her older sister, Julia Maesa, would become the grandmother of future emperors Elagabalus and Alexander Severus. So,
And they all went to Hogwarts.
Yes. And so she was the second wife of Severus and thus became a powerful figure in the regime of his successor and him. Successor was Caracalla, and I'll get into that in a moment. It is interesting. So in the year 193, Severus was appointed the Emperor of Rome, and so Julia Domna became the Lady of the Imperial Palace and became de facto managing the Roman state with her husband.
Can I ask a question? So she had a vision, or she knew she was going to marry?
Someone told... as far as the story goes, my mom sent me, he was both seeking out a bride, and I looked up the references. He was seeking out a bride, and someone told him of this like woman that would marry a king. But he wasn't a king back then,
right? But the woman was told she would marry a king,
the story says that he was told that someone would marry a king, and then apparently like he asked around like who was wanting to get married, and she was one of them. And so they just, like, ended up... I don't know.
Yeah, no.
It's kind of wild.
I thought maybe she saw, like, a psychic who was like, you'll marry a king.
Maybe. Like, maybe it was both of them. Yeah. But it's pretty funny. So as he became the Emperor of Rome, she became the Lady of the Imperial Palace and de facto managing the Roman state with her husband. She summoned her sister, Julia Maesa, and her other sister to Rome. She had three sisters, and they were summoned to Rome, and she wanted to surround herself with a large number of Syrian intellectuals, scientists, and doctors. So she brought over from Syria a lot of intellectuals that she trusted who were all Syrian. And this increased Syria's presence in Rome and the Roman Empire tenfold, because everyone, like all the advisors, all the top-ranking officials and doctors, they were all Syrian. And I will get into more things after a quick commercial break.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we're back. I'm talking about a Roman emperor called Septimius Severus. He was the commander of the army and then became the Roman emperor in 193. And his second wife was a Syrian woman called Julia Domna, who was a descendant of high priests in Syria, and they ended up marrying each other, and he took her back to Syria, and with her she brought a lot of Syrian intellectuals and increased the presence in the Roman Empire by a lot. So as I mentioned before the break, in the year 193, Severus was appointed the emperor of Rome, and she became his right hand essentially, and she had a lot of power for, and this is the first time an emperor's wife had this power. But she was very learned and very a student of philosophy, and so she wanted to have power in politics. And so, as the emperor's wife, she received the titles of Augusta and the mother of army camps. And she gathered around her a group of Roman philosophers and other philosophers and intellectuals whose activities are best known through the writings of Philostratus, which is apparently a big philosopher deal. So during the reign of Severus, Julia Domna played a prominent public role, receiving titles of honor such as Mother of the Camp, but she also played a role behind the scenes helping Severus administer the empire. She was described as ambitious, and she surrounded herself with thinkers and writers from all over the empire. And when Caracalla, her son, was training troops for his planned Persian invasion, she remained in Rome, and she was the person that was administering the empire and had all the power. Her growing influence in state affairs was the beginning of a trend of emperor's mothers having influence, was continued into the Severan dynasty. So it's a pretty big deal. So unlike most imperial wives, as I said, she was very different. She accompanied her husband on his military campaigns and actually stayed in the camp with the army. This was unheard of before. During this time, honorary titles were granted to her similar to those given to emperor's wives before her, including Mater Castorum, Mother of the Camp, Mater Augustus, Mother of Augustus, Mater Patriae, which is Patriae, Mother of the Fatherland. She was involved in building projects, most notably after a fire destroyed areas of this temple, and areas of temple that was home to this the Vestal Virgins, which is a big deal back in the day for pagan purposes. And based on evidence and historical authors and inscriptions on buildings, some scholars agree that she funded restorations to the site during his reign, during Severus's reign. So she was very respected and viewed positively for most of her tenure, and indicators and evidence include coins minted with her portrait, and they mention her in several honorary titles. And also simply as Julia Augusta. She is said to have exceeded all other Roman empresses in titles and honors. And another trend she started is her hairstyle. The hairstyle that she wore would be later worn by empresses after her. So it's pretty dope. Unfortunately, no one lives forever, and Severus died in 211 from an illness. And so she became the mediator between their two sons, Caracalla and Geta, and they were supposed to rule as joint emperors, according to their father's wishes and his will. The two men, however, were never fond of each other, and they quarreled frequently. So Severus died while on a campaign in Caledonia, in the North British Empire, or Roman Empire, and so Caracalla and his brother, they jointly inherited the throne upon his death. And they ended up ending the campaign in peace, and they decided that the Caledonian border would be marked by Hadrian's Wall. So after his death, they decided to be peaceful and leave the Caledonians with this border. But during the journey back to Rome with the father's ashes, Caracalla and his brother continuously argued with one another, making relationships between them very hostile. Caracalla and Geta considered dividing the empire in half to make their co-rule less hostile. Caracalla was wanting to rule in the west, and Geta wanted to rule in the east, but they were persuaded by their mom not to do this because she didn't want to divide the empire. So months later, they arranged a reconciliation meeting on December 26, 211. So their mother arranged this reconciliation meeting, and Caracalla, at the meeting, had Geta assassinated by members of the Praetorian Guard that were loyal to him, and so Geta died in his mother's arms. Yep. Took a turn. Caracalla then persecuted and executed most of Geta's supporters and ordered a damnatio memoriae. Basically, he wanted the Senate to denounce his brother's memory. So his image was removed from all paintings, all coins were melted down, and all statues were destroyed, and his name was struck from papyrus records.
That's petty.
Yep. And it became a capital offense to speak or write Geta's name. In the aftermath of this demandio, an estimated 20,000 people were massacred. Yep, those killed were Geta's inner circle of guards and advisors, friends, and other military staff under his employ, and then his name was removed from all inscriptions and his image was erased.
That's crazy. So Caracalla just lost his shit.
Yeah. He wanted all the power for himself. And so when he reigned, Caracalla reigned from 211 to 217. When he was on campaign, he left his mother in control of most civilian administration tasks, and she had the title Mother of the Senate and the Fatherland. He was a big fan, and he was described as a fanatic of his mother's city of Homs, and he ordered the worship of the sun god Elagabal throughout the empire instead of just in the city of Homs. So all the Roman Empire was now to be worshipping the sun god, and he ordered the transfer of that black stone from earlier from the city of Homs to Rome, and it's now in the Church of San Sebastian in Rome. It's still there. This raised the city of Homs to be one of the two major metropolitan cities, and it was second in the state of Syria only after Antioch back in the day. However, again, no one lives forever, and during his campaign against the Parthian Empire in 217, he was assassinated by a soldier. Apparently, he had taken a break to take a piss, and a soldier came up to him and stabbed him repeatedly.
Oh, he didn't cut his dick off?
No, he just stabbed him repeatedly.
Missed opportunity.
On the news of his murder in 217, Julia Domna, his mother, is said to have starved herself to death, either voluntarily or on the orders of the new emperor. After her death, her older sister successfully contended for political power. People say that she chose to commit suicide after hearing about the rebellion, and perhaps the decision was hastened by the fact that she was also suffering from breast cancer, and she was reluctant to return to private life.
This is the sister?
This is the Julia Domna. She apparently killed herself because she, for a number of reasons, apparently she also had breast cancer, and she didn't want to return to private life after her son was killed. But her older sister, Julia Maesa, she restored the Severan dynasty about a year after Julia Domna's death, and her body was brought back, Julia Domna's body was brought brought back to Rome and placed in a chamber in this Augustus mausoleum. And then later both her bones and the bones of Geta, her son, were transferred by her older sister Julia Maesa to the mausoleum of Hadrian. So after she died, her sister and her sister's sons maintained and they regained the rule for the Severus family, but ultimately, I'll get into it in a moment. Let me just finish this last little bit. So Julia Domna is remembered for encouraging Philostratus to write the life of Apollonius of Tiana. And apparently this is like an epic novel. And she's thought to have died before he could finish his work of 8 volumes. That's like her, as far as philosophy goes, she had that mark in the history of philosophy. But after the death of Alexander Sepher, the son of her older sister, he was an emperor, and his death ended the rule of this family, and it ended the Homsi, like the Homs family's influence in the greatest empire history has ever known. But it began with Julia Domna. And however, it's overlooked by history textbooks in Syria, and I didn't know about it either. But there's still a restaurant at Homs named Julia Domna, and until the story, my mom nor I knew anything about why it's called that. But now you all know too that Syrians, the reason why I brought up in the beginning, like the ancestry stuff with me and my mom, like maybe that explains how me and my mom have some Italian in us. Who knows? You know?
Wait, so they didn't make them change the name of the restaurant?
No.
They just didn't care?
I think the restaurant was established after, after a long time after that happened.
No, I know. I just mean like the
Assad's
never like cared.
I guess not. I don't know.
It just wasn't really on their
not on their radar. They're too busy like
attacking people. Looked up her hairstyle, Julia Domna's hairstyle, and I don't know, man.
Is it like those two buns? Wait, what is it again?
It's like.
Oh yeah, I mean it's just like. It's pretty ugly.
It looks like she she's curled her hair in the worst way.
Yeah.
Like she has a perm, but it's like one of those like really, really intense like starts. It looks like rolls.
Yeah. It's not cute. But
inspired
people. Yeah. Hmm. It was different. So yeah, that was my little bit. Isn't that interesting?
Really wild. So that's maybe why you have Italian in you?
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't... It was also, like, centuries and centuries ago, so I'm not going to bank on that. But it is interesting, because I had no idea that Syrians were even a part of the Roman... Like, a part of the history of the Roman emperors, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of cool.
That is cool.
Yeah. My mom was really... she was really excited about it.
So. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So...
A history lesson for y'all.
I have... interesting thing that's also about Syria, but it's also about hamsters.
Okay, I thought you were joking when you texted me this, but
no,
I'm excited to get into it.
This is very real.
Yeah.
So I'm going to talk about the golden hamster, aka the Syrian hamster, aka the Misocrestus auroratus. So last night I was at a PetSmart and I walked up to the little hamster cages because that's what I do.
Uh-huh.
And one of them was called the Syrian hamster. So I texted it to Shireen. So I was like, look, your family now.
Yep.
I didn't say anything.
And my response was, finally, some representation. Yes,
you're being repped hard.
Yeah.
So
the picture is on Instagram and Twitter, by the way.
Yes, it is. Yeah. You can go check it out. You may have already seen it. We posted it last week. So the Syrian hamster, aka the golden hamster, they're like a rodent in the subfamily Chrysotinae of the hamsters. And so their natural geographical range is limited to areas of northern Syria and southern Turkey. And their numbers have been declining due to loss of habitat and by agriculture. And apparently a deliberate elimination by humans, which I read on Wikipedia, which is the saddest thing I've ever heard in my life.
I hate that phrase.
Yeah. It really bummed me out. So now they're considered vulnerable as like a species or whatever.
That's so weird. I've never seen a hamster in Syria.
Oh, yeah, because I'll tell you. I'll tell you what happened to them all.
Oh, no.
So captive breeding programs have been established, though, and they breed basically Syrian hamsters to be kept as small house pets. They're also used as scientific research animals throughout the world. So the domestication of the Syrian hamster began in the late 1700s when naturalists, they started to catalog the Syrian hamster, also known as the Mesocretus, whatever, Orotus, or the golden hamster. And in 1930, medical researchers captured Syrian hamsters breeding stock for animal testing, and then further domestication led this animal to become, you know, like a pet. So their natural habitat is a small region of northwest Syria near the city of Aleppo. So it was first described by scientists in 1797 in the second edition of The Natural History of Aleppo, which was written by two brothers who were Scottish physicians living in Syria. Alexander Russell wrote it in 1756, and then Patrick Russell put out a second edition in 1797.
Okay.
And so Alexander Russell was a Scottish physician who had been living in Syria first from about 1740 till about 1755. And that's when he was in Aleppo, he documented the natural history of the region. And then Patrick Russell moved to Aleppo in 1750, and he stayed there till about 1780-ish. And he, like his brother, documented natural history there. It's not clear which brother first wrote the description of the hamster for the book.
This is so random.
Yeah, it's really random, but it's just so funny to me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so in Russell's book, the Syrian hamster is referenced as Muscricetus lin hamster Buffon. It's really random. Which means that the Russells, they incorrectly catalog the Syrian hamster to be the same species as the European hamster, as described by some other scientist. So, the Syrian hamster was first recognized as its own distinct species in 1839. It was in a meeting of the London Zoological Society. This guy, George Robert Waterhouse, he described the Syrian hamster as a new species. His identification of the animal happened after his 1835 appointment as a curator of the Museum of the London Zoological Society, where his whole job was to basically process different mammal specimens. So after Waterhouse identified the hamster, there seems to be no original scientific study of the Syrian hamster until 1930. So the Russell brothers, the Russell brothers wrote about them, but then Waterhouse actually identified them.
Interesting.
And so in 1930, a scientist seeking like animal subjects for medical research had the first Syrian hamsters captured to become laboratory animals. And then scientists bred those hamsters, and during the 1930s sent their descendants to various other laboratories around the world.
Whoa.
And by the late 1940s in the United States, that's when the commercial hamster industry had begun. And that's basically hamsters for laboratory use were turned into hamsters for pets. Because they're kids. They're all just fucking for science. And then
they're
kids. I'll get into who basically started turning hamsters into pets a little later.
This is crazy.
Yeah. So in later years, the further expeditions back to Syria captured other hamsters to help like increase genetic diversity amongst the populations of hamsters shared among breeders.
I can't imagine like hamsters in the wild. Like what? How do you camp?
I don't know.
So weird.
Yeah. So wild Syrian hamsters became tame in a matter of days after being captured and handled by humans. They're like quick to adapt to captivity, and they like thrive in laboratory
settings.
They gave
in. They're like, oh, this is nice. Yeah.
Like, oh, what's that? Are you just going to give me this tube of water and I just lick at it and it just keeps putting water out? Yeah. So there's an agreement that Syrian hamsters must have come to the United States in 1983. And beyond that, it's unclear how many colonies of hamsters came, why they were sent, or where they went. They believe that hamsters in the United States have all proliferated from three colonies shipped to America by different scientists. So the majority of hamsters in America come from Syria.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone knows.
No one knows this. And I literally, just because I saw that little silly name, it led to my like deep Google hole of being like, what the fuck? These hamsters are all from Syria? They're all just like little like, eh, maybe you've met my father.
Do you want to go smoke some hookah?
Yeah, I just imagine they're all like foreign.
Yeah.
Like my dad's like from Syria. So this guy, Albert Marsh of Mobile, Alabama, he established the first commercial hamster industry in the United States in the 1940s. He first got a hamster when he was gambling and he won it. in like a wager, and then he got more hamsters after this one, and they think it's from a breeding stock managed by this guy in Louisiana. And at the time he was like a engineer, but he wasn't really employed, and after getting these hamsters he like learned to breed them, and he founded Marsh Enterprises and the Gulf Hamstery.
What?
Yeah. Which promoted Syrian hamsters as pets for laboratory use and in business schemes. I don't know what that means.
The fuck?
So he made advertisements in magazines, comics, livestock trade journals, and they praised the hamsters as pets, and they presented the idea that breeding hamsters was a good business investment, which just feels like a triangle scheme.
Yeah.
Or it's a pyramid scheme.
Pyramid scheme.
Triangle scheme. And then his business, he shipped hamsters to people who would be breeders, and then he coordinated the shipment of various breeders' hamsters to other breeders or to labs.
Huh.
It's really, truly the most absurd thing. So Marsh was successful because of his professionalism that he brought to the art of hamstering. I don't know what that's called.
So
he
strange.
Authored a book called The Hamster Manual, which was like huge, apparently.
The Hamster Manual?
Yeah. And then he began a campaign to legalize the ownership of hamsters in California, which at the time was prohibited, which is so random.
Whoa.
Yeah. And with the help in like 1948, with the help of the California State Department of Agriculture, they were able to designate Syrian hamsters as normally domesticated animals.
Oh,
yeah.
Shit.
So there was like the hamstery business. It peaked from 1948 to 1951. And then like profitability dropped in like the early 1950s because they became too big. Like you couldn't basically run a small hamstery anymore.
Right.
Because everyone was getting hamsters. And so there wasn't as much local demand for hamsters because, you know, everyone had a hamster. Like all of a sudden, like it was popping up where everyone's making hamsters.
Yeah.
Everyone's breeding them.
That's crazy.
So, yeah, that's a little history about like one of it's how hamsters blew up in America is because some like researchers in Syria who were just like, well, this is crazy. Look at this little creature.
That's cool.
Or I guess they were Scottish. And they're like, Ronnie! I'm just joking. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to be so offensive right now.
So strange.
Yeah.
That's so weird. I genuinely have never heard of hamsters in Syria. I've never seen a hamster in Syria.
Literally every single one of those little brown golden hamsters is a descendant of your
me.
Family.
Yeah. That's my brother in there. Yeah.
You should go to us. That's like, that's my family!
My mind is blown.
How funny is that?
That's so crazy.
Little hamster fan.
My little sister had hamsters for a minute when we were growing up.
Maybe they were trying to tell you something. They
yeah.
were like, hey, we're the
Get
same
us out
blood.
Of here.
Yeah.
Take me
Yo,
back.
You're finally our people.
Damn. That's
but
crazy.
Maybe they're just... Because, like, hamsters aren't something you just... Like,
how,
I feel like...
how do they even survive by themselves?
Well, they're wild animals.
But, like, they're so tiny and, like...
Yeah, but it's just, like,
useless.
The same way of how, like, a mouse or a rat
right.
would survive. They just...
Okay, okay.
They scavenge enough. And they're the ecological systems
yeah.
of... They eat what...
Bro and whatever.
Yeah, and then, you know, eagles catch them and eat them, you
Circle
know,
of life.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they're just... I also just feel like...
That's so crazy. I love that you saw that sign and you were like, I need to investigate
yeah.
this.
So I was like, oh, maybe they just call it that.
Right.
I didn't know they were actually all just like from near Aleppo.
Yeah, that is so strange.
We have to get some hamsters on here to interview.
Oh my God, yeah.
Could you imagine?
On their story.
I live in Syria.
Their immigration story must be so interesting.
Yeah, they're like, I don't know, someone just put me in a box, poke some holes in it, and then just shipped me across the country or across the world.
I want every hamster now to take a 23andMe test.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could you imagine if you just started collecting your family, your hamster family?
I don't know a lot about my family other than my, like, the immediate ones. So that explains a lot.
The hamster's like, yeah, I've got, like, 2% Italian.
On my 23andMe, I'm, like, 0.9% other.
Hamster?
I'm part hamster.
It's like other,
I'm part
in
hamster.
Quotes, hamster.
Yeah. I'm part
Could you
hamster.
Imagine if you were right? They were like, yes, and as you can see, most Syrians do have some hamster in them.
That is wild.
I thought you would enjoy that.
That is really funny. I mean, I genuinely had no idea. When you texted me that, I was like, she's kidding. And then I was
like, I would never. Actually, that's funny because there were some other things I came across of like random things you didn't know about the Middle East when I was in like my deep Google search. One thing I learned, that the word mocha is actually derived from mocha, which is a port in Yemen on the Red Sea. And up until 1990, it was the primary port to export Arabian coffee, which was, you know, strong dark brown coffee to the world.
Holy shit. So
that's where the word mocha comes from.
No one fucking knows that. You're welcome, Starbucks.
And here's another thing I learned about Yemen, because I got into a weird things you don't know about Yemen thing, which was in 1997, CNN reported that three Yemenis sued NASA for invading Mars after the agency sent out like the Pathfinder spacecraft and the Sojourner rover to explore the red planet. According to the three Yemeni men, they had, in quotes, inherited the planet from their ancestors 3,000 years prior to the incident, and they had papers to prove it.
Holy shit.
I don't know what the fuck that's about, but I was like,
that's interesting. I'm going to look that up.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
I like just got deep into random things you didn't know about the Middle East.
But also like a lot of words do derive from Arabic words.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, no one really knows that.
I feel like so much like Latin. Well, that thing is like so much of like Middle Eastern culture, like the languages all just pull from each other. Mm-hmm. It's very crazy to me. Trust no one.
Trust no one.
Hamsters are like,
especially Yemenis that say they're on Mars.
Yeah.
Hamsters are really like random. Salam. Do you think if hamsters could talk, they would talk in like Arabic?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's what they understand. You know what? We'll think about this further, but we're going to take a quick commercial break.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
right, we're back, and we have concluded that hamsters speak Arabic. They must.
They must. This is an interesting thing, though. Like, what is offensive as far as, like, when animals talk in accents? Like, is it offensive when a chihuahua talks in a Mexican accent?
Well, maybe. Didn't Taco Bell make that a thing?
Yeah, but, like, so chihuahuas are Mexican dogs.
So they're like, hi, I'm Mexican.
But I don't know.
It's
an interesting thing to think about, you know? And, like, I don't know. It's a conversation for another time, I guess. But
do you think a mother Syrian to her, or not her mother Syrian, a mother Syrian hamster to her baby Syrian hamster is like, you must go to medical school. You must not just run around and eat other rodents. Yeah.
Don't be like your brother. He just stays on the wheel.
Yeah.
Look at him. He just goes around and around and around. He is going nowhere.
He has no purpose in life. Oh, I want you to dream big.
Anyway. What an insane.
Think outside the wheel.
We have gone down a hole.
Yeah. This podcast has deteriorated immensely.
Did you guys know all hamsters are from Syria?
I am amazed. I'm really glad you brought this up because I will never forget it.
Do you think there's like a little island off of Greece with a bunch of
hamster
Syrian refugee hamsters?
Hamster Island.
Yeah.
They're like, yes, we used to live in Syria, but we were pushed out to war.
Introducing the title of my next movie, Hamster Island.
Oh God, it's just like a bunch of little Syrian hamsters doing like normal Syrian things.
Do you think that they also have like
they're like the water wheels.
Do you think that they also have like aesthetic discriminant, like just like they prefer the lighter haired hamsters versus like the darker haired
I'm sure they do. They're like always like, oh, the darker you are, you will not get adopted at the PetSmart.
Just imagining them being like, you must lighten your skin.
I feel like people are going to hate this episode.
Guys, this is how it goes sometimes. Sometimes you learn about Syrian hamsters, well, then you do bits about them forever.
To be fair, both of our topics today uncovered stuff about Syria that we had no idea about. Mm-hmm. And so you're fucking welcome. We should learn more about Syrian history, even if it is the origin of your fucking pet hamster.
Yeah. That is literally a thing I've never thought about in my life, is where the fuck did that hamster come from?
Yeah, exactly.
Never.
Damn.
Does anyone think about hamsters ever? Cross your fucking mind?
Oh,
never.
Man.
I'm telling you. I honestly will leave today and never think about a hamster again. That was it. I was like, cool. It's from Syria? All right. Peace, dope. Hamster. Have a good life.
Dope.
Anyway.
Oh, man.
Good times.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
What should we do? Should we read some stuff?
Sure.
Okay.
Emails? Emails?
Yeah, I have my email up. We can read some recent reviews, too. I think we got some nice ones yesterday or last week. Let me look at this email. Okay.
Fucking hamsters, man.
I know. It's fucking hamsters. Should we say this episode be like, we are hamsters?
We are descendants of hamsters.
We are Hamster Island.
Yeah.
Anyways, so the first email is from a lovely lady called Nora. Her title is, I'm Iranian and Arab, and I love your podcast. Thanks, Nora. She says, I couldn't think of a catchier subject line, despite that being my literal job. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I want to let you both know how much your podcast means to me and my cousin. We're not actually related, but we're cousins in the Middle Eastern way. Being cousins, totally get that. She's Armenian from Beirut and Tehran, and she's in the Marines. She says, weird, I know, I don't get it. I'm Iranian, she says, an Arab. Her dad is Iranian, her mom is Saudi and Syrian, and her whole life has been extremely confusing on all those fronts. When I met my cousin, in quotes, I finally found someone who I could revel in the confusion with, plot Arab leader fantasy leagues with, and binge eat hummus with. No one has ever wanted to participate in our Arab politics book club or even chat about how there was a conspiracy theory that we found online that Morsi was not a real person and in fact played by Eugene Levy. I don't know. I don't get that part.
Eugene Levy is like cosplaying as Morsi and Morsi never existed.
Oh.
No, I don't know. I'm asking you.
I don't know. Is that what she means? Explain. She says, seriously, guys, I can't believe there's another duo out there just like us. Anyway, her cousin has been in training for more than a year, and we rarely get to catch up and talk. So your podcast has meant a lot to both of us. We feel like we're with the other person when we're actually a world apart, and she's sleeping in a hole for training. Sorry, this is insanely long. I just have a lot of feelings. XOXO. thank you, Nora. Don't apologize. Thank you so much for writing to us. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that we could help you feel less alone, especially when your BFF cousin is away. I'm glad that we can fill that space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's very nice. I've never thought of it that way.
Please explain this Morrissey theory further.
But she said Morrissey, like M-O-R-S-I.
Who's
Morrissey?
Like the president.
Yeah.
Not the president. What was he?
There was a conspiracy about how Morrissey was not a real person and played by Eugene Levy.
Like Morrissey or Morsi?
Morsi, M-O-R-S-I. Is that real?
He's a president, or he was in the Middle East.
Maybe we can make this a topic.
Yeah, Mohammed Morsi. Morsi, M-O-R-S-I.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he was the Egyptian president from like 2012 to something.
Well, apparently there was a conspiracy that he was played by Eugene Levy. I think I'm going to make that an episode topic eventually. That sounds funny.
So, yeah, he was replaced by Al-Sisi.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you want to read a review or an email?
I can read a review. Okay. I just have the reviews open.
Okay, sweet.
Because I'm lazy.
Okay. So we got a review call from Sick Knitter. The subject is important conversation. I'm usually not a fan of conversational podcasts, but this is a conversation that needs to be heard. The girls bring an intimate view of the Middle East and of living in America and a Middle Eastern heritage. I used to teach a very diverse school where I learned from students and parents from around the world. Now that I'm mostly stuck at home due to disability, my world has become very small and very white. The hosts helped me feel like I haven't completely fallen off the planet. Thank you, Sick Knitter.
Yeah. I'm glad that we can be helpful to you in your time of need.
Mm-hmm.
What else? Is there another email I can pull up? I mean, you guys send us so many nice things. Well, there is one longer one that I really want to read. But maybe I'll just try to summarize it. It's from, I'm sorry for saying your name wrong, Stepanka. Her email is Stepanka. you ended the email with love, Stepanka, and the letters have a lot of accents on top, so I'm definitely pronouncing it wrong. But basically she says, first of all, I love your show. I've been listening almost since the beginning, and I want to try you for a long time. I'm a very white girl from the Czech Republic, and I started listening to your podcast to learn anything really about the Middle East and its culture. In my country, we have very small minorities. To paint the image, I personally don't know anyone of Middle Eastern descent or any black person. And I've been living in Prague for a few years. The ignorance of any other culture, apart from Vietnamese, that's really the only, quote, bigger minority living in our country, is very dangerous in the wake of neo-Nazism and racism, which is spreading all alarmingly through Europe.
Yeah.
The migration crisis was a big starting point of the populist propaganda, and people who had never had any problem with people of color were persuaded that they were all coming to kill us. Everything is politics. My own grandmother was so badly manipulated that she voted for a party whose only program was that they didn't want any migrants in the country. A while ago, there was an effort to accept only 50 orphans from Syria and to find them a home in the Czech Republic. The proposition caused a big resentment in most of my country, and this little help was actually denied. We only have accepted 12 refugees so far.
That's sad.
Every time someone opens up about the subject of the migrant crisis, I tell them about you, and I tell them to go and study something on their own. People here, and perhaps in the U.S. also, say that the refugees from Syria and other places can never assimilate and live according to our laws, and that's just pathetic. I saw a documentary about Middle Easterners living here for years, working as doctors and so on. It's heartbreaking when they talk about how they have never had problems with anyone, because Czechs are typically a very laid-back nation. People shout at them since the migration crisis and the propaganda began. A very stupid thing once happened to my friend. It was raining, and she took her scarf from her neck and covered her head. She got on the tram, and some random man shouted at her that he, quote, won't have any of this Muslim scum in his country, and he threw her off of the tram. But basically, she wasn't Muslim at all, and it was just an unpleasant experience, and she talks about how she thanks for the podcast, and the reality of, like, bringing the reality to the podcast world, and she said, thank you for your podcast. It makes me go and study subjects I wouldn't have otherwise known anything about. I love you both. And she says, sorry if there are grammatical mistakes or anything. As Shireen says, English is not my first language. You're welcome.
Your English is pretty amazing.
I know. Thank you for writing that. It's a really good email, and thanks for everyone else that wrote us too. Yeah. That means a lot to me. And Anna.
Sherry,
I believe I can fly. I've been singing that song for a long time. I'm sorry.
Oh.
I believe I can touch the sky.
Oh. Oh. All right. So, you know, these are the days. The hamsters are real. They're from Syria. Shireen's Italian.
It's
crazy.
I think I'm going to post the breakdown of my 23andMe because it's really interesting. It's like, it's just fascinating. So maybe I'll be like, this is what ethnically ambiguous means to me. And there's just so many different places. But yeah, thanks for sticking around for this episode. As we said in the beginning, we have a TeePublic promo code with 25% off. The code is HUNGRY.
HUNGRY!
HUNGRY! Because of our last week's episode, and it's 25% off. Please go and check out our store. The link is in our bio and on Twitter, on Instagram.
Because you're hungry like a wolf.
Or if you want the URL right now, just teepublic.com/ethnicallyambiguous. We have so many different graphics and stuff, and they're all able to be made into anything you want, whether it's a shirt, a tank top, a sweater, a baseball tee, a long sleeve t-shirt, a tote, a mug, a pillow, what else is there?
Like
stickers, phone cases for your cases for your phone or laptop,
a mug,
did I say everything? The posters, artworks, yeah, all good stuff. So go support the show and rip our merch. And I'm wearing one right now. You're going to see in the photo that we upload. Ethnically ambiguous tea.
Yeah.
It's a tea, but it's actually a tank top. It's a tea tank.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Follow us on Ethnically Ambig on Instagram. Follow us on Twitter at Ethnically Amb, A-M-B. Go to our website, ethnicallyambiguouspod.com. You can follow me at Anna Hosnier.
And you can follow me. I recently changed my Twitter handle because I wanted to match my Instagram more. So now on Instagram, I'm Shirohero, Shereohero. And on Twitter, I'm the same thing, except Shirohero666. So...
The devil is in you!
So, yeah, maybe it'll make it easier for me to say my handle all the time. But also, I hope you guys enjoyed the episode we had with Charlene. It was released last Wednesday. We're going to be doing more of these interviews with people, and I had a really good time talking to her. We talked about filmmaking and intimacy and her debut feature film, and so I hope you guys listen to it, and if you haven't, go take a listen. She's really amazing, and it was nice dedicating an episode to her because it's cool to lift each other up, y'all.
Meow.
Yeah.
Our office dog is losing her shit, so Shireen, are you going to bite that ass?
I'd bite that ass.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying...
A podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season... We're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.